Today we're going to be speaking about folk rock. It starts off with a question. The way it began was that for many generations it's been a question about something called Gestaptigens, or Avozas Lutais, or Avozas Hamofutamas. Those are all the same things for saying stuffed geese. Gens is geese, and Gestaptigens means stuffed geese. And it refers to what used to happen was they would take geese and they would stuff them, overfeed them, force feed them for a couple of weeks to the point that the goose would become particularly fatty, and then they would use that fat. They wanted to get very for schmaltz, for animal fat to use for cooking, and that's what they used to do with it. And as we'll see, this Tyson spoke about this much about this, about whether that is allowed or not allowed. The modern variation of that is it's done in very similar ways, but the issue of the question that people have for nowadays is, can they use particularly the livers of that? The liver is called foie gras. Foie gras is a French word for fat liver, and it's considered some kind of a delicacy. It's a liver created when you fatten the goose in this way, creates a liver that has a certain properties to it that people consider desirable. It has a different color to it. It's white or off-white, and it's particularly fatty, and it has this taste that people like. So there are, to my knowledge, there are four different issues to consider. We're going to briefly talk about each one of those four issues that there potentially are. And the first is species. And that is, as I mentioned, what you stuff with these is geese, is a goose, and commonly that was always done was a goose. It was called foie gras d'oie. I don't know, I probably didn't pronounce that right. But in more recent years, people have started doing it with a duck instead of with a goose, a moulard duck, and they call foie gras de canard. And moulard ducks, we've spoken about this in the past, moulard ducks are made from a female Peking duck and a male Muscovy duck. And there are shadows about the cautious Muscovy duck, whether we have a Masuri on it. And therefore, we assume that moulard ducks are not kosher. For that reason, there was a company that once applied for hashgacha. They came to the OU, they wanted to make foie gras. And the OU told them they could not use moulard ducks, they had to use Peking ducks, because moulard ducks, we do not consider to have Masuri. They wouldn't give the hashgacha on that. So that's in picking the species. In talking about the species, it's worth noting that the Tzlach is one of the people who spoke about Gestaptigens, about this issue, these stuffed geese. Again, not for the livers, just for general, the Shiloh. And he said, listen, it's bad enough that people are eating the stuffed geese with all the Shilohs that we're going to hear talking about that. But we should leave it to that, and we should not extend it to other kinds of birds, and you should not do any other birds. It's enough that we're doing it for the geese. We shouldn't be doing it for other birds either. So he would be saying that we shouldn't be doing it with ducks. So that another question, issue with picking the species that we want to do it with to favor the geese. And maybe in America, where they hadn't been doing it at all, maybe we should do the same idea and not continue. But that's the first question, having to do the species that we're using for these to create the foie gras. Okay. The second is a question that the public speaks about, even the non-Jewish public speaks about, which is tzar b'lechaim. And that is that the way that they force feed these geese, the traditional way to do it is they take this metal pipe, they stick this metal tube down the goose's throat, and they just pour grain or other starchy foods down there. And to the look of it, when you look at the bird going through this, it sure seems painful. And people were concerned about Tzar B'lechaim. And again, even non-Jewish groups are concerned about that it's not being humane to the animals to do this to them. So those who feel that this is an issue, look at, there's a Tshuva in Moshe who speaks about veal. And he says, if you're doing something to an animal, you're treating it in a painful or uncomfortable way, just so you should have a better color of your meat should be white instead of red, that's tzar b'lechaim for no reason, which is not permitted. And they say the same thing over here also, you're trying to make something a little bit better, and it's not appropriate to do it to the animal for that reason. But on the other hand, for most of you said, if it's going to make the taste better, then that's something within reason that's not considered within the issue of tzar b'lechaim. That's one angle of thinking about why this may or may not be an issue. The second thing is that even though to us it seems like we're force-feeding them and overstuffing them and doing something that they wouldn't be interested, that that the bird doesn't want to do. The truth is that geese and ducks on their own will overfeed themselves. Before the winter, they overfeed themselves. So that is to say, the state of being overfed or stocked up, being overstuffed, is not something that's unnatural or strange to those animals. So really the question is not that they are overfed, it's how it's done. And again, as I described, taking a metal tube and sticking down their throat sure seems pretty painful. But in more recent years, people have come up with other ways to do it. Instead of a metal tube that gets forced down, they use a plastic tube, which is more flexible. And they only do it at certain times, as if I could chew about this. Also, they only feed it when the crop is empty. The crop is like a storage pouch in the bird's neck, like before their stomach. So they do that. They do it in ways that appear with an effort to be more humane. And you could see a difference in how this has progressed, how it's become more, in what seems to be more humane, is that there were two visits that I see reports of. In 1998, the European Union Scientific Committee went to watch a farm where they raised these birds. And then in 2005, some American veterinarians went to see a similar, another place like this. So the Europeans, when they said the following. They said when the ducks or geese were in the pen during the force feeding procedure, they kept away from the person who would force feed them, even though that person normally supplied them with food. In other words, the birds did not like this. They were running, they were staying away from the person giving them food. You'd think they would want to go near that person, but obviously they had bad feelings or bad impressions of what had happened and did not want to go back and be forced by that person, again, implying that there was that there was some kind of a issue, some kind of a discomfort. Yeah? As opposed to the Americans who said the birds do not appear to be anxious around the person feeding them. And they said, the Americans looked at it and said it's really more like a tube feeding, which is reasonably comfortable as compared to a force feeding, and they were not so moved by it. Again, so the point here being that was from 1998 to 2005, giving the impression that people have advanced methods that may not be as painful as they used to be. And in that regard, it's interesting to note, there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia who speaks about a pasuk in Malachim, who talks about Shlomo HaMelech having barburim avusim, and one pshat in that Gemara is that these birds, barburim, at least in modern Hebrew means, is a different kind of bird, whichever bird it is, but they were avusim, according to one pshat in the Gemara, means they were force-fed, as if giving the impression that either there's a way to do that's not painful, or that pain is not causing that kind of pain to the animal is not a concern of Tzar Bali Chaim. It's such a pshat. Now, within the question of Tzar Bali Chaim, I've been talking about is there actually a concern of Tzar Bali Chaim, but related to that is, even if there's no technical issue of Tzar Bali Chaim, there's an issue of perception, which is that in many countries, many cities, it's illegal to serve foie gras because of the concern of Tzar Bali Chaim. So in Eretz Yisrael, even it appears that it's illegal to raise birds that way. It might be legal to serve foie gras, but not to raise them in Eretz Yisrael like that. The way Rabbi Reis said it was, it's sort of like a mi-kamidi. Is it possible that the countries of the world consider this to be Tzar Bali Chaim and the Yidden would go ahead and allow it? It seems like backwards. We should be more careful about these kind of things. One part of the question here is there actually Tzar Bali Chaim? And related to that is that even if there's not technically Tzar Bali Chaim, there may be a perception of Tzar Bali Chaim, and that in itself might be a reason to avoid allowing kosher foie gras. Okay, now, the third issue is the one that gets the most attention in the Poskim, and that is, which is where the Ramah speaks about in Siman Lamed Gimel, and the Daki Tshuva has lots and lots to say about this, lots of people who spoke about this, and later, of course, if that as well, more contemporary Poskim, and that the question is that putting a pipe down the bird's neck, repeatedly down the bird's neck, potentially raise an issue of Nekuvas HaVeshet. The Veshet is the way the food goes down, and the din is that even the smallest hole in the Veshet makes the bird into a trefa. We've spoken about that in the past. Makes the bird into a trefa. So if I keep poking a pipe down the bird's throat, does that potentially make the bird into a trefa by making a hole in the Veshet? Okay? So So there's a lot of parts to that question. One is, does sticking the pipe down make it into a trefa? Does it maybe depend on what kind of feed you put down? Depending on which feed, depending on which kind of feed you put down, maybe that makes a difference as to whether certain feed is more likely to poke a hole in the vegetable or not. What about if you did it? Are you allowed to check? The Rama in Lama Gimel seems to imply that yes, you can check it, but the Rama elsewhere says we don't do bedikas on a vegetable anymore. We don't consider ourselves bedikim to do on the vegetable. Also, we do they do this force feeding for a few weeks. So if I check it after the Shechita, maybe at that point there's no hole, but maybe there was a hole when we first started this process. And it's already healed up by now, in which case it was once it had the hole, it would be a trefa. Also, how do you check it? Do you check it by, do you look at it visually? Do you pull air into it and see if it has any leaks in it? Do you put water into it? And here in the picture you see some of the CRC people are looking at a veshet from one of these birds by filling it with water to see if any water leaks out. So there's all different questions here in the Pesukim in Darkei Tshuva. There's all kinds of tshuvas about what is the right way to do it? Is there a way to do it? Does maybe only inflating with air only work for lungs and not for a veshet? All kinds of different questions like that. So there's a lot of different parts to the question of how we do it. A sort of aside is, some of the Pesukim speak about maybe these birds are so unhealthy that they couldn't live, or their livers look sickly, or they would never be able to eat if you didn't force feed them after this. And that maybe it's a trefa for a different reason. Again, I've been focusing till now on the Kumas HaVeshet. Those, someone who we know checked it and took birds like this and afterward let them get off this force feeding diet and eat regular, and within a few days they were eating regular, and then eventually they did a shechita and livers had come back to themselves. So that doesn't seem to be a concern, at least nowadays. But the Nekuas HaVeshet is a shaila about the Nekuas HaVeshet, and if and how to check it are very serious shailas that the Pesukim spoke about. And many of the Pesukim, particularly, it seems, a lot of the Chassidish Pesukim, and those in Eretz Yisrael, and the Hartzvi, and the Chazanish, and some of the more later Pesukim, have said that in their communities they did not allow these stuffed geese. Okay, the Bach, who's one of the early ones who speaks about it, says, a rav who could get people to stop doing it, who get people to stop being make about this potential issa deraisa that they burn as a trefa, tavil lebracha, that he was trying to mean mavatal his idea that people should do this. But the Rama implies that it was okay, but lots of communities forbade and said you're not allowed to do that. And so this is the issue that has the most written about it in Shulis about it, are this problem, the questions of, is the bird a trefa when it was stuffed in this way? Now, it is noteworthy that they say over that in the more recent years, Rogelsky looked at the veshet of these birds, and he had a procedure for how to check them. He said it wasn't as bad as it used to be, and the lungs didn't look so bad, and he had a way of how to decide whether they were or were not good or not. Unfortunately, we don't have any written instructions from him of what you're supposed to do or how it's supposed to be checked, so it's a little vague from that side. But supposedly, he had some kind of a method how to do it. But this third issue is the one that has the most discussion in the Pesukim. Now, the fourth issue is specific to folk ra, and different than all the other ones, which were general for stuffed geese. And that is, how would these livers be kashered? Now, in the past, all the Pesukim speak about it, talk about, in general, they would stuff these birds to get the fat from them. Presumably, they kashered the livers also. I have no idea. We don't know. I don't see anybody speaking about that, if there's anything special about kashering these livers. But for us, the actual kashering livers seems to present a big challenge, or a biggest challenge that there is, and that is like this. These livers don't look like your everyday livers that come out of a bird. The livers are white or off-white, as opposed to being like red or darker colors. They don't change color when you broil them. They don't change much. The color seems basically the same, and you don't see blood dripping out like you usually do with the liver. And it's really hard to judge if the liver is cooked enough that you should consider that all the blood came out of it. We spoke about last time about what it takes to show that the liver is fully cooked. It has to be edible or reasonably edible. And it's hard to tell really when it's done and when it doesn't look much different than when it started, to say, okay, now it's finished and now it's ready to eat. When they make it in the non-Jewish world, they do it in a pan so they could collect all the fat that comes off of it. But here, what would you see that looks different about it? But the more even fundamental issue is that the reason why people want to eat this liver is because it's so fatty. And if we take the liver, in fact, people have, and take the liver and kosher it like you kosher a regular liver, you know, stick it on in a pan and stick it on in a grate and put it over the fire, what happens is the entire thing melts away. The fat melts in the fire, and there's nothing left of this liver. So doing it in the traditional manner is not going to work. So we have to come up with new ways of doing it to try to figure out how to kosher it. So people said, okay, let's kosher it in a chamber that's hot, that has no fire in it. Without the fire, you know, it won't melt the liver as much. But we saw last time that most places go, that's not going to be good enough. And you have to have a fire in there. Well, if you put the fire into there, then that's going to melt away the liver and sort of going to defeat the purpose, melt away all the fat out of it, which is going to defeat the purpose of why you made this fatty liver in the first place. So one Rav Moshe told us that Rebelsky told him what you should do is like this. Put it over a fire. In fact, put it over a fire until they're dry on the outside and they change color significantly all the way through. And the internal temperature will be 125 degrees, and that will be considered edible, and that's how much a cook would do it to, even to around there, and that would be good enough to make it considered kosher. Now, some people from the CRC went to see a place that said they were following these directions, but if you look at the pictures, you'll see some of those livers in this picture are kosher, and some of them are not, and it's basically impossible to tell the difference between them. They don't look much different one from the other. So Yarovsky said you should broil them until they change color significantly. It's really hard to tell the difference between which one is the kosher one and which one is the not kosher one. So this issue of how to kosher the full grown livers is still something that's really unclear, and it's not settled of how in fact to kosher these livers to have a liver but have it that it should be kosher. So based on these different considerations, all these different points, just from sort of the summary of it, is we said that we should not allow it to be sold here in our area. We should not give hashgacha to it because of all these different, in his words, murky halachic issues. And then he quoted the words from the Tevor Shor, who speaks about the Shiloh in general, about stuffing geese, who says, "Mi'olam muzharim v'anim v'beis yishroi l'halas l'halak klal." In my family, our house, we do not allow these stuffed geese. Ba'nizer, and a person who is careful about this din, yizkei l'asad lovoy, la'avsa d'rava rachana, sha'avusim, v'andemi aleihem. And there he's referring to two different things. One is the other sheet of the Gemara in Bamitzia that said that the geese, well, the aburim in the times of Shlomo HaMelech were not force-fed, but they fed themselves and became overstuffed by themselves. More naturally, and the Rav Baruch Hanna also, in the stories, in all the Mishalim, the stories of Rav Baruch Hanna, speaks about geese that were super fatty and this and that. So also lovely, the Tevor Shor says that Mir Tashem, the person who refrains from overstuffing the geese and getting into all these shilos, will be zeicher to have that kind of delicacy, also lovely, in a more natural and kosher way.